This is a double banger video. We'll tell you about the shameful family history of Anthony Albanese's family. Indeed, Albanese's real name isn't Albanese, it's Ellery. Once we've let the cat out of the bag on Albanese or Ellery, we'll show how his inherited intergenerational character weaknesses have sold out Australia. His mother, Mary Ann Ellery, was gifted a trip to Ireland in 1962 aboard the ship the Fair Star, paid for by her criminally convicted father, George Ellery. Mary Ann lived with her parents, as eventually did a young Anthony. More soon on Mary Ann's criminal father, George Ellery. On the Fair Star, Mary Ann on the right, hooked up with Italian waiter and busboy Carlo Albanese, who impregnated her. At the time, two-timing Carlo was betrothed in Italy. He eventually married his Italian fiancée, and until later in life had no contact with or knowledge of what became of his sexually ambiguous son in Australia. Based on historical newspaper reports from 1922, following is a summary of George Ellery's criminal history and the context surrounding him. George Ellery was a printer with a successful business, funded partly by printing materials for the Australian Labour Party, while engaging in forgery and printing betting slips for criminal activities. He was known to be relatively well off, enabling him to send his daughter on a cruise to Ireland aboard the Fair Star in 1962, when it was impossible for working-class Australians to do so. George Ellery, 37, was involved in two separate fraudulent schemes to accumulate his wealth while working-class Australians struggled. Ellery was implicated in a fake medicine labels conspiracy in 1922. He was charged with conspiracy to defraud and in possession of 40 forged trademark blocks. A trademark block, often called a printing block or trademark block, is a physical tool used in traditional printing to reproduce a trademark, logo, or design. In the pre-digital era of the 1920s, trademark blocks were essential for commercial printing. Forgery required expert skill to carve accurate imposter copies of existing trademarks. Counterfeiters like Ellery exploited these blocks to produce fake labels at scale, undermining trust in known brands and defrauding businesses like the Sydney Importing Company, which imported trusted branded medicines. Being an imposter runs in Anthony Ellery Albanese's family. If you want to look up the Ellery case and co-conspirators, do so by the names of Raymond Kellick, 23, taxi driver, George Ellery, 37, printer, Sidney Dunn, 38, chemist, Francis Thompson, 32, business manager, William Anderson, 50, and Matthew Royal, 37, traveller. All were charged in a 1922 Sydney court for manufacturing and selling counterfeit patent medicines. Ellery admitted to printing 65,000 fake labels and possessing 40 forged trademark blocks. This was no small-scale operation. It produced huge profits, like drug dealers rake in today. Mary Ann's cruise to Ireland is hardly what poor families did at the time. The Ellerys were a family of means. The Ellery gang supplied wholesale dealers with spurious medicines, including defrauding the Sydney Importing Company. The case involved 50 witnesses. Ellery faced three charges, while others were charged with fraud, trademark forgery, and sales of bogus drugs. Ellery also produced fake betting cards, resulting in subsequent criminal convictions. He wouldn't have been above printing fake election voting ballots for the Labour Party. His Labour Party connections likely shielded him from other crimes and lasting reputational damage. The Ellery family flair was passed on to his grandson, Anthony. Anthony Ellery Albanese is a fake. His mother came from a relatively prosperous family that had lived off the proceeds of crime. George Ellery was raking in big money as a crim. He didn't need to live in public housing with his wife and daughter, Mary Ann. It was a matter of choice and convenience, not abject poverty, as Prime Minister Anthony Albanese likes to peddle in pursuit of the politics of pity. Albanese has a fake name, not congruent with his birth name. Does he call himself Albanese to cover up the shame of his grandfather George Ellery's repeated criminality, or to bond with a philandering Romeo Italian father who never lived in Australia and who didn't want him? Now look, is the grandson guilty for the sins of his grandfather or the poor judgment of his loose mother? The answer is absolutely not. However, as the old saying goes, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and you can't escape the destiny of your DNA. When Albanese engages in misdirection or equivocates, we must ask, is it the character of old George Ellery or the poor judgment of Mary Ann Ellery we're witnessing? For example, Anthony Albanese was told by federal police and ASIO that so-called anti-Semitic attacks in Australia were being committed by a foreign actor. It was Israel's secret intelligence agency, Mossad, who was behind the staged attacks in Australia. It was Jews attacking their own to paint Australians as virulently anti-Jew, aiming to sway Australia's foreign policy to favour Israel by strangling Australians' anti-Israel opposition to Israel's genocide in Gaza. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has been indicted by the International Criminal Court, took to ex-posting Australians are anti-Semitic, and Anthony Albanese was doing nothing about it. He was shaming Australia for what he himself had green-lighted Mossad to do in Australia. The chutzpah of the man knows no boundaries, as tens of thousands of dead Palestinian mothers and children have experienced. Anthony Albanese knew the truth about Israel's Mossad. He was told by the federal police, an ASIO, he didn't have the guts to call out Benjamin Netanyahu for committing acts of terrorism in Australia. So what did he do? Instead of publicly unmasking the Jews and Israel, he cowered and grovelled before rich and powerful Jews in Australia. He then stripped Australians of free speech as directed, quickly enacting odious hate speech laws, mandating mandatory 6-year prison terms for criticism of Jews who support and finance Israel's crimes against humanity. As cover, he said, it was for all minorities in Australia, despite existing narrower, targeted, specific legislation with clear definitions. The new laws are purposely vague to specifically suit Jews and Israel. At least old George Ellery owned up to his mischief in Dobbed and his co-conspirators. His grandson did no such thing in the great anti-Semitism scam. Instead, he doubled down and persecuted the victims, the Australian people. Anthony Albanese took away their free speech ability to call out Jewish mischief and menace. This happens all too often in Australia as the media covers for Jews, as it did during the recent manufactured anti-Semitism hysteria, helped and fueled by a corrupt Jew-captured Australian media that covers for Jewish mischief and Israeli menace. Most Australians don't even know one of the two Jewish owners who bought the New York World Trade Center towers weeks before they were demolished on 9/11/2001. Was an Australian Jew, Frank Lowy, founder of the Westfield Shopping Center empire. He and his New York Jew partner, Larry Silverstein, cleaned up with a $4.5 billion insurance payout on asbestos-riddled buildings brought down in a Mossad masterminded operation executed by American domestic agencies to justify the wars against terror abroad, to benefit Israel and the American military-industrial complex, to profit from the wars, and to run down old weapons stockpiles and test existing new weapons and develop new deadly technology raking in billions. There's the Mossad name again, as it was in 1962 when President Kennedy was assassinated for opposing Israel building covert nuclear weapons using stolen American technology and enriched uranium. Look up the Apollo affair and the NUMEC company based in Apollo, Pennsylvania. Israel got its weapons. It covertly built a world-destroying arsenal in Dimona in Israel and refuses International Atomic Energy Agency inspections, let alone admit that it has nukes. At the same time, it points the finger at Iran over its nuclear program and fails to mention that Iran is International Atomic Energy Agency compliant. Iran has been a member of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, since 1959. As a member, Iran is subject to IAEA safeguards and inspections to ensure its nuclear program remains peaceful. Over the years, Iran's nuclear activities have been the subject of international scrutiny and negotiations, leading to various agreements and resolutions aimed at monitoring and regulating its strictly peaceful nuclear program. Iran is also a signatory to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, NPT. Iran signed the NPT in 1968 and ratified it in 1970, making it one of the original and most committed parties to the treaty. The NPT aims to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons, promote peaceful uses of nuclear energy, and further the goal of disarmament. In contrast, to this day, Israel refuses IAEA inspections or to sign the NPT. Heck, it won't even admit its nuclear arm to the teeth. Remember that next time you hear about Israel wanting to attack Iran or have America do it as its proxy, it's Israel who is the nuclear protagonist and danger. We're being lied to, and only our free speech can protect Australians and the national interest. Jews don't want this. Their interests are Israel first and foremost, right or wrong. There are seditious Jewish traitors, and they're lackeys amongst us, and our politicians refuse to protect us. As whereas former Labour Prime Minister Gough Whitlam did stand up for Australia against the Jews whilst Anthony Albanese abandoned Australia during the anti-Semitism hysteria, we'll shortly let Gough Whitlam tell you in his own words his story of defiance against the Jews. Some believe he got sacked for defying Israel. It's not the last time Israel and Mossad have undermined an Australian Prime Minister. former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has his own story to tell. What have Australian Prime Ministers and the Jew vassal media said about Israel's blatant hypocrisy potentially driving us to World War III? They're saying nothing. How can that be? Thanks to Albanese's vague hate speech laws to favour Jews, you could go to jail for a mandatory 6 years if you say Jews have captured Australia's politicians, its foreign policy and the media. Anthony Albanese must come clean if he wants to be re-elected as Prime Minister. He must tell us about Mossad's involvement in Australia. George Ellery squealed when caught. Anthony Albanese should too. Or is Australia to be delivered into the arms of Jewish blackmailers who have the goods on Anthony Albanese? At least former Labour Prime Minister Gough Whitlam had the resolve to stand up to the Jews when they tried to blackmail him to capture Australia's foreign policy. We already know Peter Dutton is fully owned by the Jewish lobby. In July 2024, powerful Melbourne Jews took Dutton on an all-expenses-paid junket to Israel to meet Israeli power brokers, promising Jewish support from Australia's mere 120,000 Jews. Jewish political donor money makes up for the lack of a large or meaningful voting bloc in Australia. The numerous Jewish front organizations with pompous names and few members seek to amplify and project electoral voting influence beyond their small, insignificant numbers. What they don't have in votes, they have in billions of dollars from rich Australian Jews who bully the media and buy, bribe or blackmail politicians. These disloyal Australian Jews are loyal to Israel first. They're a menace to Australia despite recent foreign interference legislation introduced in recent years to stop them, and is yet to be used against them. The Dutton junket was in breach of the legislation in influencing Australian politicians. The legislation must immediately be used to protect Australia's national interests and security from foreign capture by disloyal, seditious Jews inside Australia who work with Israel and Mossad to commit crimes in Australia, such as when Mossad forged Australian passports to commit assassinations abroad. They did it during the prime ministerships of John Howard and Kevin Rudd. When Mossad was caught, Australian Jews squealed anti-Semitism. It's a weaponized term Jews regularly use against their enemies or anyone they don't like or agree with, or against anyone who criticizes Israel. Now let's watch former Prime Minister Gough Whitlam retell the Jewish blackmail attempt during his tenure. The occasion you're about to see is a Canberra press conference in 1979 upon the release of Whitlam's biography, The Facts of the Matter. It's precisely what we've detailed here and what you need to know. The facts of the matter as they relate to the chameleon Anthony Albanese, or more correctly, Anthony Ellery.
On page 125 in your discussion of international affairs, you have a reference to Australia's role in the Security Council of the United Nations during the 1973 Middle East War.
Yeah.
And you say there that Sir Lawrence McIntyre was president of the Security Council when the war broke out, and you say that political pressure and even blackmail was brought to bear on you and your government. But despite that, you gave him every support. What was the blackmail? How was it exercised? And who was responsible for it?
The blackmail was exercised by some heroes in the Australian Jewish community on the other side of the world from the hostilities, that we should support Israel in the dispute between Israel and its neighbours. And, of course, my government at least pursued the expressed policy of all Australian governments to be neutral in those disputes and to take all steps available to Australia in resolving those disputes. And it would have been an appalling thing for us to come down on the side of, on one side, at the time that an Australian was in the key position of President of the Security Council. Now, if I may enlarge on this, since then, people in Australia should realise that there are now as many Arabs as Jews in Australia. There are as many Muslims as Jews. And we want everybody in Australia, of whatever racial origin, of whatever religious persuasion, to live in harmony and fruitful cooperation in this country of their adoption or their birth. And
Bob Carr was Australia's foreign minister for just a year and a half, but the Labour heavyweight found enough material to write a 500-page book on his time in the job. In the diary of a foreign minister, Bob Carr details what he sees as some of the biggest problems in Australian politics. He singled out the Israeli lobby, saying its influence on Australian politics has reached an unhealthy level. Let's go to the book. The strongest criticism of all in the book is aimed at the Melbourne Jewish lobby. What's wrong with the way that group operates?
Well, the important point about a diary of a foreign minister is that you shine light on areas of government that are otherwise in darkness. And the influence of lobby groups is one of those areas. And what I've done is to spell out how the extremely conservative instincts of the pro-Israel lobby in Melbourne was exercised through the then Prime Minister's office.
The Jewish lobby, they have power. I often have contemplated, why did Bob Carr ever flip? Why did that former New South Wales Labor Premier flip from his ironclad support for Israel at Labor conferences? No one spoke with greater passion and conviction and effectiveness than Bob Carr, but he flipped, I think, on the basis that perhaps the lobby exercises too much power. And there are, funding mechanisms and media influence they bring to bear that's not necessarily in the public interest.
Kevin Rudd recounts a meeting with Melbourne lawyer and Jewish lobbyist and political power broker Mark Liebler, who since 1996 has been the national chairman of AJAC, the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. The meeting was a dinner at the Lodge, the Prime Minister's official residence in Canberra. This is what Kevin Rudd says happened after he rebuked Israel over the passport and assassinations matter, and he attracted the ire of the Jewish lobby. Now let's hear what happened at that Lodge dinner between Mark Liebler and Kevin Rudd and his advisers. 3 weeks after this dinner, Kevin Rudd was no longer Prime Minister. Julia Gillard replaced him. The dinner was a political kiss of death for Rudd. In 2010, Kevin Rudd expelled from Australia Israeli Mossad security and spying agents for forging Australian passports to carry out assassinations. Rudd recalls what precipitated his political demise, according to now explosive revelations by Kevin Rudd, who is now Australia's ambassador in Washington. Jews threatened him at the Lodge in Canberra. Following is what Kevin Rudd says occurred at the 2010 Lodge dinner.
Out of respect for my parliamentary colleagues, I suggested that we invite leading members of the Jewish community to the Lodge for dinner to discuss the matter further. The dinner was held on the 3rd of June, and I remember the evening well. I sat there politely as Mark Liebler berated me for having committed such a hostile act. I found this remarkable, as I had been a strong defender of the State of Israel from the earliest days of my diplomatic career, and had always been a vigorous campaigner against all forms of anti-Semitism. And for Liebler to attack the democratically elected Prime Minister of his country as he sought to argue the interests of another country was beyond the pale. You do realize that this is Israel's second offense? I said. What do you mean? He asked. They did exactly the same under Howard, got a gentle rap over the knuckles, and promised never to do it again. Liebler looked stunned. I don't believe you. Then why don't you sit down with the head of foreign affairs, who is the former head of ASIO, and I'll authorize him to brief you on exactly what has happened here. I countered. I think you'll find that our response to Israel's actions has been entirely reasonable under the circumstances. Liebler still stared at me in disbelief, and then disbelief turned to anger. Apropos of nothing, he said, Julia is looking very good in the public eye these days, Prime Minister. She's performing very strongly. She's a great friend of Israel, but you shouldn't be anxious about her, should you, Prime Minister?
Liebler's sinister Julia Gillard remark was at best an astute observation, and at worst it was a threat, which we all now know came true when Julia Gillard deposed Rudd for the Prime Ministership. Ask yourself, who has such inside knowledge, access or influence? Liebler was also involved in encouraging Paul Keating to move on Bob Hawke, who hitherto had been a friend of Israel. These people have zero loyalty when it comes to advancing Israel's interests first and at all costs. Liebler's political views have been described as ultra-Zionist. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's ultra-Zionist ruling Likud party wants Palestinians gone from the face of the earth. Since 1996, Liebler has been national chairman of the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council, known as AJAC. Defanging Liebler and the organizations he represents is vital to Australia's national security, as these entities peddle Israeli interests masquerading as domestic community groups while they disarm Australians of their own national interests, which are not Israel. Israel's interests. This is dangerous at a time when covertly nuclear-armed Israel poses a threat to world peace over its mistreatment of Palestinians and their lands dispossessed by the State of Israel that was Palestine prior to Jewish terrorism of 1948. The legitimacy of Israel as a nation is questionable and only exists because of British patronage of the Balfour Declaration and now US aid and its defense umbrella. Moral support from nations like Australia is consensus support in the global community. That's where Australian Jews come in, ensuring it remains captured for Israel. Australia is unwittingly being dragged into Israel's disputes without the Australian people being aware of shadowy domestic Jewish influence peddling and power broking them into a global morass Israel is causing. This influence extends to removing ministers and prime ministers deemed not to unequivocally support Israel. Liebler publicly criticized the Australian Labour Party's stance toward Israeli settlements and the diplomatic status of Palestine, notably conflicting in public in 2014 with Australia's then Foreign Minister Bob Carr, who was critical of Liebler. Carr became another political victim of the Jewish lobby. Alongside his chairmanship of AJAC, Liebler is life chairman of the United Israel Appeal of Australia and governor of the Australia-Israel Chamber of Commerce. He is also a patron of the Victorian chapter of the Australian Friends of Tel Aviv University. Liebler served for 10 years as president of the Zionist Federation of Australia and for 6 years as president of the United Israel Appeal of Australia. Liebler is a past chair of the World Board of Trustees of Keren Hesod United Israel Appeal. He serves on the executive of the Jewish Agency for Israel and holds office as a governor of Tel Aviv University. Jewish interests operating within Australia for Israel covertly have power and influence to shape and guide Australia's foreign policy for Israel at best, and at worst for Australia to remain silent to placate and appease Muslims in a multicultural Australia. We all know silence is consent. That consent condones the land dispossession and genocide of Palestinians by Israel. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd was the second time Jews have deposed an Australian Prime Minister, and not a word in the media has been spoken of the Jewish involvement. That speaks to the power, reach, and influence of the Jewish lobby in Australia that operates in the shadows and under the radar out of view of the Australian public. The Australian Foreign Influence Transparency Scheme Act requires monitoring and prosecution of Australian Jews and anybody else who acts in the interests of a foreign nation. In America, the Foreign Agents Registration Act is supposed to do the same as the Australian Foreign Influence Act. The law requires individuals and entities undertaking certain activities on behalf of foreign principals to register with the Australian government. These activities include lobbying, communication, and other forms of influence directed towards Australian government decision makers and key media. The aim is to increase transparency about foreign influence activities in Australia. The Australia-Israel Jewish Affairs Council, or AJAC, is one of the culprits in Australia, yet they've never been investigated or prosecuted. The Jewish Anti-Defamation Commission is another culprit, and they too have never been prosecuted. There is a coterie of Jewish organizations that do the same thing in America, breaking the influence peddling law in Israel's interests. America has the exact same problem of Jewish influence peddlers defying the law with no repercussions from bought, bribed, and blackmailed politicians. The media holds its nose and looks the other way. The people are oblivious to what's happening. Gough Whitlam was correct. Australian Arabs and the Muslim community's growing presence in Australia was going to be incendiary to Australia's interests as shadowy Jewish power grew and Arabs and Muslims resented it. Jews have been undermining Australia's unity for decades by seeking to atomize the nation with divide and conquer. The Jews' siege mentality fears white Caucasian unity. The State of Israel exists as a refuge for world Jewry. The everybody hates us Holocaust narrative is its religion. From an early age, Jews are conditioned to stick together and divide their hosts to diminish their authority and power. Both the native title movement and the voice referendum had Jewish sponsors when one looks behind the curtain. Divide, conquer, and weaken white Australia is the motive using the cover of social justice. Gough Whitlam saw through the mischief. He saw the future if Australia was captured and divided. He warned Australia. That warning must be heeded today. The consequences of that warning are precisely what we're seeing today, with Jewish lobby groups playing victims, playing up the anti-Semitism canard and controlling media narratives with their grievances, while executing spurious incidences of persecution to reinforce and prove their claims. You've seen them spray-painting Jewish occupied properties and claim it's evidence of anti-Semitism. Australians are now awakening to the ruse and Jewish mischief and menace. Jews must not be allowed to hijack the domestic policy process through blackmail and influence peddling by well-known Jewish mischief-maker power brokers. Australia's sovereignty and independence is at stake. It's the same for America. More importantly, Gough Whitlam's social cohesion warning must be at the forefront of any misplaced government support for Israel. It will create problems in Australia. It's the same in America. We're now awake. Spread what you now know to friends, colleagues, and family to make the invisible visible. Only then can something be done about the Jewish menace in our midst and undermining of Australian sovereignty by a clique of rich, connected, and organized, seditious, treacherous traitors masquerading as seemingly integrated Australians who in fact never integrate and are loyal to Israel first. They're so loyal to Israel that they'll overthrow elected prime ministers in Israel's interests. No doubt they'd even use forged Australian passports to assassinate Australian leaders if they thought they could get away with it, as they've done abroad. Whitlam was correct by pejoratively calling them out as heroes of the Australian Jewish community. Calling someone a hero pejoratively means to use the term sarcastically or ironically, implying that the person's actions were not actually heroic, but motivated by self-interest, incompetence, or other negative traits. Essentially, it's a way to criticize or belittle someone by using the term in a way that highlights their flaws or failures rather than their bravery or noble qualities. That's what Whitlam was saying as he knew of the Jewish attack dogs, which would hurl anti-Semitism slurs at him if he was direct and blunt, so he used sarcasm, which Whitlam was known for. It's the way Jews operate, and Whitlam knew it. Slander, libel, and blackmail is in their usual toolkit. He'd already experienced attempts at blackmail and wrote about it. Ask yourself why you've never heard of any of this in the Australian media. Why isn't it talked about? It's because of money and power. The hidden hand that seeks to run Australia's foreign policy, unless there is a defiant and strong patriotic leader like Gough Whitlam, who was able to resist and defy the Jewish lobby, but didn't survive when the lobby called in outsiders to depose him when he wouldn't bend to Israel's interests. It was a coup, and not a royal decree, that had Whitlam dismissed as Prime Minister. To his dying day in 2014, he believed it to be a conspiratorial coup. He didn't probably understand the full extent of those involved, and blamed the executioner, the Australian Governor-General, John Kerr, who did the bidding of unseen hands which saw Malcolm Fraser become Prime Minister. Whitlam eventually reconciled with Fraser, but never with Kerr. So who was blackmailing Kerr? Only Whitlam knew, and he never forgave Kerr and never openly named the culprits despite his displeasure of Malcolm Fraser at the time. The truth ran deeper, far deeper. You can read the truth of this matter in Gough Whitlam's 1979 recount of his prime ministership, which he mindfully entitled The Truth of the Matter. In the book's title is the word truth, for it's what you've just seen and heard as told by Whitlam himself. He never named specific names when asked the press conference question you saw earlier. The closest he came was to call them heroes. They got what they wanted with the demise of the uncontrollable Whitlam, who wouldn't be bought, bribed, or blackmailed. Assassination was out of the question by the same people who had been used on President Kennedy, who was about to cut off Israel for developing covert nuclear weapons using stolen American technology and material. This was an existential threat to Israel. Kennedy had to go. Mossad did the bidding of then-Israeli Prime Minister Ben-Gurion. Mossad partnered with rogue elements in the CIA, and Kennedy was liquidated. Whitlam wasn't liquidated, but he was nevertheless removed. It's time, was the election slogan Gough used to sweep into power in 1972. It's now time for Australia to wake up to ensure it doesn't become a captured nation by Jews for the rogue state of Israel. For this is what's happened to America. Seditious Jews have been lying and scheming for decades. We're not going to take it anymore. We're now fully awake and aware of their mischief and menace.